Good morning. Today is Friday, the 12th of January. Joining us this morning, interim temporary
acting, sometimes part-time.
And all of the above, Fire Chief for Humble Bay Fire, Bill Reynolds. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Boy, it's probably good not to be in L.A., huh?
Yeah.
With all the fires and all the stuff down
there?
Fire
and brimstone and then mudslides. When are they going to catch a break?
Well, you know, the thing that I see as a bit of a challenge with that is the rescue side. You know, I know we don't talk an awful lot about rescue when we talk fire. You know, it's suppression, right. It's interface, it's... But rescue is a big thing that you guys do, too.
Absolutely. It's, you know... Pretty much, if another public entity doesn't do it, the fire department tends to inherit it.
You guys pave roads too?
In some communities, I think they do take part in that. But with rescue, that's something that we specialize in, whether it be urban search and rescue after earthquakes and things like that, or even animal rescue. A lot of times, we're the people. We have people that have been trained in large animal rescue as well. So
what would be here? Horses?
Horses, cows. In the last year, we've responded several times to horses being, you know, caught in a ditch or caught in a pond or caught in any number of different things. And while we can't do it by ourselves with just the fire department, it's usually a cooperative effort between us, you know, veterinarians, the animal owner.
That's what I would think. You know, call the rancher.
Right.
And then he'd probably bring in his young, healthy assistants and they grunt the thing out.
Absolutely. And that happens a lot of times. Most of the time we get there and we get called for it and we end up just being person power to be able to help, you know, rescue the animal. But sometimes we have, you know, with our heavy rescue skills, with our equipment that we carry, we bring a little bit more to the table to be able to be a more integral part of that.
In our area, I think everybody's pretty familiar with some of the goofy might not be the right word, but the extraordinary during floods, the cows and moving the cat, that kind of stuff. I wouldn't think that that's the kind of rescue that you guys get involved with, because if the waters are up there, there's a whole bunch of other stuff that takes a higher priority.
Right. And we don't usually mess around with moving animals and things like that. Usually when it comes to us, we get called for, and in the flood situations, people that have stayed just a little bit too long and now they can't get out. Several years ago, before consolidation, I was a part of a rescue out in the Elk River area where a disabled person had stayed in their house and the water came up and they were like, we can't get out on our own now. So one of our chief officers ended up bringing his personal raft from home, and we ended up rafting somebody out of their house. And not something that we're necessarily trained to do, but we made it happen. And again, that just raises the awareness of, you know, a couple of things in respect that, one, what more training do we need to be able to help handle our unique things in our area? But two, you know, reinforcing with the public, when you're told you should probably get moving, you should probably get moving. That's for a reason.
I thought, okay, we got the fire boat. Maybe you need the fire kayak?
Or the fire jet ski or something like that.
Or the fire bass boat.
There you go. That'd go over big.
Yeah, I would imagine you'd have a lot of folks wanting to train on that one.
Right, yeah. Right. And do summer training or whatever the season is for that.
So. Yeah, gee, up on the lake. How do you train for some of this stuff, though, Bill? I mean, with the fires, okay, you guys train fire, but how do you train getting somebody out of a rural setting or a medical aid in the fires? Is that your responsibilities, or is that more like the sheriff or their marine posse if it happens to be water related, or the firefighters that are out there from either Cal Fire or wherever they're from? They have that responsibility to get them to a spot where you can airlift them out with a copter.
Right. A lot of times, it's going to be a joint effort, because if it's somebody who's been in the woods for several days or in an area, a lot of times we will depend on the sheriff's search and rescue posse to bring somebody to us. A lot of times we'll go in with them. Sometimes, you know, again, a couple of weeks ago, we had out in the Elk River area, we had a person who had taken a fall off of a bike and off of a bridge in the Elk River area, injured very bad, broken leg, had to be basically hiked out. our crews went in with the ambulance crew and ended up being the ones who found them and packaged them up and be able to extricate them out of the area. So
was that on the Headwaters Trail?
It was on the Headwaters Trail, yes.
Oh, good. So you got to go way in.
It was way in there. And
everybody's huffy-puffy by the time. Yeah.
And that goes to the physical fitness side of things. You know.
Yeah. But, yeah, when I think physically fit, fireman isn't one of the profiles I immediately flash to.
Well, these days, over the past, couple of decades, the physical fitness side of the fire service has really come a long ways, where it used to be kind of the old impression of people sitting around the coffee table, a little bit bigger, now it's, people with the number one killer in the fire service being heart disease. Our firefighters have really taken that to heart, and so to speak.
Hey, that works. Bad puns are us.
And, the guys, the physical fitness levels of our guys are way well beyond what they used to be.
Is that something that the medical folks, you're just doing it as an actuarial, try that one again, an actuarial chart? Or is this something that's really cultural and systemic, like when the guys are making the meals, do you guys in management force or direct say, okay, is it hitting the nutritional standards and that kind of stuff? Or if they want to have hamburgers five nights a week, that's okay.
We don't enforce from the administrative side of things. We don't tell them what they can and can't eat. But culturally, and like you said, culturally and systemically, they've most of the people have adapted and said, rather than fried foods and other things that are considered generally unhealthy, they have adapted to a more healthy eating style. Now, you still see hamburgers and steaks every so often when guys buy their own food and bring it in. But for the most part, the people in the department have really adopted a more healthy living lifestyle to be able to have some longevity after retirement, should they get there.
So the French fries are kind of by the side.
Yeah, you see a lot more sweet potato fries these days.
Oh, man, I just don't like those. They just taste goofy.
Funny story about that.
Lots of ketchup, though. KINS, News and Information Time is 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Bill Reynolds from Humble Bay Fire. Bill, how do you train for search and rescue? I'm thinking earthquakes now, more specifically. That's going to be, you get the windstorms, okay. You get some of the power outages, maybe a redwood tree blown over every once in a while, but it's not going to be on any kind of a scale at all. How do you train for search and rescue with something as large as earthquakes? We don't have body sniffing dogs. We don't have a lot of those types of tools and resources that LA Fire might have. How do you guys train for this stuff so when the events do happen, you're there, you're rolling, and nobody's freaking out?
Through the state of California, excuse me, we have different levels of training. All of our firefighters are trained to what's called Rescue Systems 1. And Rescue Systems 1 is basically basic level. It goes over everything from rope rescue to starting to get into shoring for buildings that may have collapsed, and also heavy object moving and lifting. And then we also have firefighters who are specially trained beyond that level to Rescue Systems 2 and other heavy rescue topics. And they're part of our urban search and rescue team. And we actually have equipment from the state. We actually have a trailer given to us by the state OES to be able to, give us specialized equipment to be able to deal with that. And not only are the firefighters trained elsewhere, our training site down at the foot of Hilfiker Lane is actually a recognized, certified Rescue Systems training site. So our firefighters can not only train there and be able to do heavy object moving and lifting and rope rescue and everything, we can bring other agencies in to be able to help train them as well. And the other thing with our urban search and rescue team is they're not only available to us locally, but if something were to be really bad down south, they could be activated and called into, since we have the equipment from the state, we have an obligation to go help out other areas as well.
And vice versa.
And they would have to come up here and help us as well.
So that's kind of like, not mutual aid, but I guess akin to that, like if there's the big fire, you guys send a crew down to fill in the blank wherever that is.
Exactly. And you'll see in a lot of areas, speaking of the OES, the OES actually provides a lot of fire departments a fire engine, and they can use that in their own agency as a reserve engine or be able to use it. But it's the ugly lime green ones.
Not that we have any biases here.
Well, I come from the land of yellow fire engines, too.
Yeah, I know. Okay, the green, yeah.
But with the lime green ones, those are typically OES engines. And again, like with our urban search and rescue trailer with the equipment we have, with the lime green fire engines, if you have one of those, you have an obligation that during fire season, if they were to call for help or something, you put personnel on that and you send it to wherever they need you to help out, and you go to work.
That's just part of the deal.
Absolutely.
How many greens do you have?
We used to have one. We don't have any anymore. We ended up, because basically what the problem was with consolidation, we still go out and we help with strike teams and we help with station coverage for CAL FIRE. But the problem for us was we would be able to send one of our engines out, one of our, what are called Type 3 fire engines, typically a wildland fire engine. Then we would also have the obligation to send the OES engine out, the lime green one. We'd have two units out, and that would create such a strain at home for staffing that our personnel were just getting hammered on. So we reduced the fleet and basically sent the OES engine back to the state, but we're still able to participate with our Type 3 engines going out and doing coverage and also helping out with going to other areas to help out with their fires.
Still part of the team, but you're not crippling the home team.
Absolutely. It's finding some balance.
To quote a phrase.
Yes.
So some of the challenges, with the earthquakes, I would imagine your training facility doesn't crumple on with the push of a button.
Right.
And how do you practice the earthquake stuff, or is that all tabletop stuff?
We actually have props that are down there that simulate not only collapse and things like that, but we also have an area that's affectionately known as the pile that has a lot of large rocks, cement slabs, and that our crews can use to basically move things around. And they can work on, in the different props that we have, we actually have a house down there. We call it the USAR house, Urban Search and Rescue USAR. And they can use that to simulate basically different types of situations on the inside with different configurations for propping things up, shoring, and whatnot. So it doesn't cover every situation. Obviously, every situation is different. An earthquake with a lot of collapse and things like that is pretty dynamic. But for the most part, they can keep their skills sharp by practicing those skills. And then when the real thing happens, obviously, they still need to be smart firefighters and smart rescuers and be able to say, okay, I've seen this situation before, but a little bit different. This is how we're going to handle it. And
it would make sense. Do you incorporate the sheriff's department or the local police departments in this also? I'm thinking significant enough. So let's say in Eureka, 101 South or 4th Street. Okay. Roads closed. Buildings are out in the street. People were in the buildings. You don't know how many there were. Go. You're going to have the cops involved. You're going to have the detours involved. You're going to have you guys involved. You're going to have the Coasties involved. You're going to, all volunteer. I mean, you're going to have a whole bunch of people that aren't normally there training. How do you do that element of it?
We do work together with the Sheriff's Department in respect that we understand that during a situation of an earthquake or any kind of large disaster, they're going to be primarily helping us out with evacuation, helping with traffic control. None of them participate on our heavy rescue team, the USAR team. But our USAR team, even though Humboldt Bay Fire sponsors it and we are the primary people that are on it, we've had members from other departments on there as well. So we've brought in people from local volunteer departments. For a short time, we had people from Arcata Fire on it. And so in that respect, we don't necessarily have law enforcement on it, but if somebody were to get the training, we'd welcome them and we'd bring them in and integrate them into our system.
Teach them the handshake?
Absolutely.
All right. And how to cook healthy. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Bill Reynolds, Humboldt Bay Fire Chief. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, by Redec, and by Lolita Cheese Company. Bill, what is the relationship and what resource does the Coast Guard bring to the table? You know, we hear about the air station, okay. We see them flying the SLU around Humboldt Bay every once in a while and doing some of their practice runs out in the bay, and then you hear, okay, you know, they shoot up the coast, or they shoot down the coast to some, the various rescues. From a fire guy perspective, what do they bring to the table?
I can't say enough good about the Coast Guard. Like most people, they provide such a valuable service to our area. You know, having the nautical influence and everything, and our interactions with the Coast Guard primarily come in two respects: water rescue in the bay. You know, we do have people that either, whether they jump off the Samoa Bridge or whether they fall in, we have that. And one of the first calls we make
is... There can't be too many trip and falls on the bridge.
Right, right. There's other circumstances involved okay. there most of the time. But when we get a report of somebody in the water as we're responding, because we've had in the past, we don't have it right now, it's on suspension, but we've had a water rescue program. One of the first resources we call for is the Coast Guard, because they can bring a lot more forces to bear than we have access to, such as boats and the helicopter. And not only the helicopter for rescue, but also... You know, with the current in the bay moving as swiftly as it does, they can basically provide, you know, the eye in the sky, so to speak, to be able to spot somebody for either us or for their resources to be able to bring it in. The other area we see a lot of interaction with the Coast Guard is if we get a vehicle in the bay or something like that, is the pollution cleanup. Obviously, the motor vehicle fluids leak out, and we in that respect, even though we have people that are trained in hazmat, if it's out in the water, we have very little resources to be able to deal with that. So we can bring them in, and they can start to evaluate and what needs to be done to help basically stop the flow and then start working on the cleanup.
So they're kind of like triage for something like that until you bring in the state guys that have got the goofy ropes and things that lie
absolutely.
In the water.
Yeah. So we actually, and you know, the Coast Guard's been really good about providing us training in the past. We don't typically find ourselves in the helicopter too much. You know, the Coast Guard's pretty obviously locked down with that stuff, but there have been circumstances where they've had an offshore emergency where they've needed either whether our paramedics or the ambulance paramedics take somebody out to be able to stabilize somebody. So they're good about providing us with training and familiarization with the helicopter, because again, if you don't work with them every day, that's something where you can find yourself in a little bit of trouble if you approach from the wrong way or a lot of other things.
Is that a duty you guys jump up and down to volunteer for, to fly the helicopter out to the boat?
As safely, I would say yes. I think that most.
Well, not in the middle of a storm. Okay, gotcha.
Right. Yeah. But on a day like today, when it's clear and blue, and if they had an assignment to go out there, I think most guys would be lining up with their hands up to be able to do that.
Now, two things really sound cool. One, the helicopter flight. Two, that today is going to be clear and blue.
Yeah. Well, amateur weatherman. So
yeah, fine. Okay. Troy doesn't have to worry too much. I know you guys send folks back to Quantico for some of the FBI stuff and the team project and the role playing and whatnot. What would you ideally like to have to help out with some of the search and rescue in that kind of a scenario where everybody's at the table? Okay, you get to choose the dynamics of the situation. You're the head puppeteer of the event and pulling the strings and making things happen. What would you like to see?
Honestly, for me, the first thing would be, even ahead of the event, all of us having a, whether it's a sit down or a process, to be able to have a very clear idea of how we're going to cooperate and work together. You know, even though the emergency services and the fire service and law enforcement are all allies and we work together, you know, in a lot of different respects, we don't always communicate so well. It's gotten a lot better. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy working with everybody out there. But a lot of times when the chips are down and when we have a major disaster, you know, at least the first, you know, 12 to 24 hours are pretty chaotic. So to really have a good, clear plan in place that we not only have sat down and talked about and blown the dust off and developed, but also practiced and gotten together and said, okay, we're going to have a full-scale drill involving fire, law enforcement, Coast Guard, Cal Fire, and all these different stakeholders in this, and really have our stuff dialed in. So when the real thing happens, you know, we basically, it's muscle memory at that point.
Can you do that on a local basis and pull everybody together? There's some way that it can be done because everybody's shooting folks back for 2 weeks.
Right.
Okay. So it's possible.
Yes.
Is there a willingness to do something like that and get off site somewhere for a week and go through a scaled down version of what you're talking about? Because I would think if the interest is there, there would be the ability to be there. And it's not a 9-to-5 thing.
Right.
It's, you know, they say most of the deals are cut at the bar. You get to know people over the hors d'oeuvres. The hanging out part, I think, is just as critical. So you know how somebody communicates and what kind of individual they are.
Yeah, and we actually have had large-scale exercises like that with our, I mentioned the USAR team earlier. A couple of years ago, we actually had a full-scale USAR drill out at the old Samoa pulp mill that's abandoned. We only had different heavy rescue and rope rescue operations going on. We had the full integrated incident command staff with law enforcement and fire and everybody out there as well. And that ended up being a 12-hour exercise. It wasn't an overnight thing, but you know, I think there is a giant willingness because everybody recognizes that, especially up here on the North Coast, in something happens, we're going to be standing alone for a while, so we only have each other to help each other out.
Well, and most times it's not going to be just us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the entire coast is going to get nailed with whatever it is.
Yes.
Yeah. KINS, News and Information Times, 842. We will be back.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka. Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:46. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Bill Reynolds from Humble Bay Fire. Bill, what we've talked about so far are the normal weird, you know, earthquakes, fires, floods, all that kind of stuff. We've got this new thing now with these people coming out with the guns and trying to either do the hostage thing or, you know, the school scenario or mass thing like we had at the country concert in Vegas. There is carnage associated with that or injuries. How do you guys play that game? All right, I mean, can you really train to that? I wouldn't think you want to go under live ammo and practice. How do you work that one through?
Yeah, we talked earlier about working with law enforcement and the earthquake aspect and everything, and this is, with these new unique scenarios, this is truly the area that we have to interface and change the way we've done business in the past. We were talking a little bit off air about in the past, you know, the fire service, if there was violence involved, if there was gunfire, we're firefighters. We don't carry guns. We don't carry armor and things like that. We would stage at a safe distance away, allow law enforcement to go in and do their job, their very dangerous job, and be able to contain the violence. And then we would come in at a later time and we would basically help basically pick up the pieces of the carnage and the people that had been injured. The problem with that is, though, in an active shooter situation, is that as law enforcement is going in trying to catch the shooter and get them, and we're staged as distance away, people are bleeding to death and they need help right away. So the evolution of the active shooter is showing firefighters integrating with law enforcement. We don't carry guns. We don't carry weapons. But as the law enforcement officers progress into the what we call the hot zone, where either the active gunfire is or where the shooter's known to be, we have firefighters now under escort, properly equipped, of course, being able to go in and get to people, have access to victims sooner to be able to start life-saving care and be able to extricate them out of there. Now, that requires a lot of training with law enforcement, and there's actually mandates coming down that, you know, we are mandated in the active shooter situations to be able to train with law enforcement to be able to handle that appropriately.
Now, on a smaller scale, you probably run into something akin to that with some of the responses for medical aid to domestic violence.
Right.
You get into something like that, and all of a sudden, either somebody comes back or whatever it is, starts as a medical aid, and oh boy, aren't things changing.
Right.
Is that a small sampling, a snippet of what you're talking about on unfortunately, on a larger scale?
Right, it is. If we go into a situation that we know that's like you mentioned, domestic violence or an assault or something like that, if the assailant's known to be on scene, we will still stage a block away, allow law enforcement who's responding in with lights and siren to be able to contain the situation, and then we'll come in and be able to handle that. The situations that are difficult for us are the ones where it evolves, where we get dispatched to a medical aid for difficulty breathing. We arrive on scene, begin patient care on somebody, but then the person who caused the situation, whether through some act of violence, shows up again. That's why it's really important for our crews to have really good situational awareness, be heads up. You know, as I like to joke and say, you know, firefighters run in packs. You know, we always have, you know, three people on the engine company. We, while people are involved in patient care, one of the members, typically the captain, is sitting back with their head on a swivel, looking for any situations that might evolve. And
that would be the senior staff member on site?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
and their job is basically make sure, and if they see something, they can assess and react accordingly.
Too much fun, man. Thanks for coming by.
Hey, always glad to be here.
All right. Enjoy that blue sky out there. See everybody on Monday.